Orale, bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm your host, Jorge Martin, and today, vámonos, let's go to Hotlanta. You're the home of the Georgia Peach. We've also got the Braves down there. We've also got Coca-Cola down there, but we've also got the Falcons, Los Falcones. And bringing us into the inside training camp is Michael Rothstein of ESPN NFL Nation. I mean, I'm so pumped to have this, someone from the worldwide leader join our independent podcast. Michael, bienvenidos. Thank you so much. Gracias for joining us.
De nada, Jorge. It's exciting for me to be here. As I was telling you pre-show, I will do my best to mix in some Spanish. I've been learning Spanish for about a year, and hablo español poco, pero not fluent. So, like I said, I'll go here and there when I can, if I can answer some of your questions in Spanish. But hopefully, listeners will bear with me with my. Mostly only English tongue.
Oh, no, it's all good. It's all good. I mean, since we're the only Latino-focused podcast in English, hey, you know what? We mix in some Spanish here and there, so any effort is appreciated. And, let's kind of start at the top on here. You've got a coaching change, new regime, head coach Arthur Smith coming over from the Titans. He's really developed a reputation as an offensive guru over there, which when you got guys like Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, you put them in the right spots. They make you look really good. He's coming over to kind of like a very different team. You don't have a Derrick Henry, that kind of jackhammer there. You've got a veteran quarterback in Matt Ryan. How is, first off, the early days of both OTAs and early training camp, how's the regime change kind of coming through? And then if you could give us a look-see into kind of like how the scheme may be shaping up offensively.
Let's start with the weather, which is muy caliente. Muy caliente. I don't remember what the word for humid is in Spanish.
Humido.
But humido. Humido. Muy caliente, muy humido. It's been really hot, especially today. We're recording this on August 10th. I'm not sure when it's going to drop. But today was particularly muggy out. But you're seeing the change already. And I wasn't here last year. This is my first year covering the Falcons. I was covering the Lions for 8 years for ESPN before that. But one of the things I had heard a lot about the previous regime was that they were big into slogans. They were big into, sayings, motivational, this, that, and the other. Arthur Smith is not like that. He said early on during a press conference during training camp that he's not about the fluff. For him, it's really all about the football. And you can tell that in how he runs practice, in how he speaks to the media, and how he handles players, in what he's doing. And that has been a big difference. Now, what will that mean in September when they, face Philadelphia? Who knows? It's next to impossible to really predict that. The preseason is always something you should take with a massive grain of salt. The Falcons in particular are being very vanilla with everything that they're doing in practices that are open to the media, certainly in preseason games and the scrimmage they had at Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Saturday. So I don't think that we're going to get a real gauge for what this team can be. Maybe the preseason games, maybe Miami next week in the joint practices, but in reality, probably not until week three or week four of this season. And there are a lot of questions, a lot of them defensively. Offensively, you kind of know what you have with Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst, Russell Gage, Kyle Pitts, the number four overall pick, is a phenomenal talent. We'll see how that comes together. There are questions on the line. There's questions at running back. But it's right now, to me, just still a big, giant question mark right now with so much with the Falcons.
Well, let's go. One of the preeminent holdovers from the team is the quarterback, Matt Ryan. And so much pre-draft talk was, are they going to draft his successor? Are they going to draft his successor? And, they went to Kyle Pitts, who we'll talk about in a few minutes. But he's been one of the pass attempt leaders for several years. In some of the and kind of, you know, you talked about it's going to take 3 to 4 games to really see what this team is going to be, is going to look like. Is this just kind of forecasting still to be a heavy passing oriented team?
I think so. Arthur Smith's a guy who will scheme and play to his personnel. So based on the personnel they have, I don't see them being a team that's going to run Mike Davis, who's never had more than, I think, 160 carries in a season, Derrick Henry-like numbers. And really, if you look at what they invested or didn't invest in running back behind Mike Davis, you have Cordarrelle Patterson, who's kind of a hybrid running back, wide receiver. You have Quadri Olison, who's hurt right now, but unproven at running back out of Pittsburgh from a couple of years ago. You have two undrafted free agents, and they signed Deonta Foreman, the former running back from Texas who's bounced around the league as well. So it's not exactly a formidable group. This isn't like Cleveland where they've got Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, and you know that, okay, this team's going to run and run and run, and they're still running, like that type of thing. This is a team that's built for short passes, play action passes, two tight end sets with Kyle Pitts and Hunter Henry. Hayden Hurst, sorry. I always do that. Hayden Hurst and Hunter Henry. I don't know why I do that. But Hayden Hurst, not Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry's in New England. Hayden Hurst. And then their receivers. Their receivers are pretty good, especially their top three in Calvin Ridley, Russell Gage, and Olamide Zaccheaus. Beyond that, there are some depth questions, but you're talking about your four and your five receivers. The number four wide receiver right now is a guy named Tazae Sharpe. He was with Arthur Smith in Tennessee. So, and the number three tight end is Lee Smith, again, a guy that Arthur Smith is really familiar with. So the depth has familiarity with Arthur Smith. So I would anticipate this scheme looks a lot different and the play calling looks a lot different than what we saw in Tennessee. I think there'll be some staples, some familiarity, some similarity, but not, this isn't like you're just taking the Tennessee scheme and being like, blop, and drop it right into Atlanta, and it's the same thing. The offense, maybe that happens in 3 years when they, or 2 years, when they're able to really cycle through their guys and get who they want in there. But I just don't see that happening this year based off of the personnel that they have.
So really, I mean, Matt Ryan, I think we, from a fantasy standpoint, I think we could still expect him to be, you know, maybe not one of the top 10 quarterbacks, but, you know, in like that next group that's still going to throw for a lot of throw for plenty of yards and, you know, a respectable amount of touchdowns. Kinda.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, because don't forget too, this team's defense, I don't think is good. We'll start there. I think they have some potential. They have some talent. Their secondary has actually looked quite strong during camp, but take that for what it is. It either means their secondary is really good, or maybe the offense isn't as good as we think, or it's the offense getting caught up to scheme. So I think there's a lot there, but this team could be behind in a lot of games, and that means more Matt Ryan throwing the ball, and that's what makes some quarterbacks, even if they're not the best quarterbacks in real life for fantasy purposes, makes them very relevant. It's why, you know, sometimes a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick can be a very valuable fantasy quarterback, even though, you know, his teams don't exactly win games all the time. So I think that Matt Ryan can fit in that category, but he's also just been consistent. You know what you're getting from him. You're getting somewhere between 4,100 and 4,300 yards, somewhere between 25 and 30 touchdowns, somewhere between, you know, 9 and 14 interceptions, three of which will leave you scratching your head as why he threw that pass in the first place. And that's what I think you're going to get from Matt Ryan this year. Now, maybe that changes because they don't have Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. But by the end of the year, Calvin Ridley last year was looking more like the clear number one anyway, especially with Julio Jones being hurt. And I think that him being in that role as a clear number one will help him. And I think it's going to help Russell Gage too, who has a lot of potential, but was in a number three hole and really what, the fourth or fifth option generally out of the backfield or in the passing game most of last year. I don't think that is going to be the case this year. I think he'll probably be number three or number four behind Calvin Ridley, and when he's on the field, Kyle Pitts.
Let's stick with those receivers. You wrote an article recently talking about where Calvin Ridley talked about how very openly about how his ankle, his foot is fixed. I think that was in quotes after off-season surgery. Considering this guy had a pretty much a monster year last year on that, But you mentioned now the throne is all his, that the wide receiver one, he's not sharing it with Julio Jones, or he's the 1B to, or the Robin to his Batman. What could be, I mean, are we looking at more of the same? I mean, it's hard to project a better season than that.
I think so. Because I think you're going to see – so Julio Jones, I don't remember exactly what his targets were last year, but let's just call them 130 for argument's sake, right? Well, a good portion of those I think are going to go to Kyle Pitts. And then I think a lot of the rest of them are going to get spread around. Does this mean Calvin Ridley gets more targets this year? Yeah, I would think so. Does this mean Calvin Ridley is going to get 70 more targets this year? No, it shouldn't. If that happens, then either Calvin Ridley's having one of the best seasons in history, or everybody else is hurt. But that should not happen. I would think that a lot of the Julio Jones target share might go to Kyle Pitts, because now they've got two tight ends they can really count on, where they didn't have that a season ago. And Pitts is a guy that he's going to be labeled a tight end, but he is so much more than that. He can line up anywhere, Jorge. He can line up outside. He can line up in the slot. He can line up in line. He can run any route in the route tree. He's big. His hands are pretty good. He's struggled a little bit with drops, but I think that that's just getting acclimated at this point. I would not think that that is a concern yet, but he's a really good player. He's as advertised. And if you're the Falcons, you have to feel really good about what you've seen in the first 2 weeks of training camp from Kyle Pitts and what that could mean in the long-term future. Tight ends often struggle in their rookie years. Now, I think Kyle Pitts has a chance to buck that trend and maybe be a very successful tight end as a rookie. But even if he's not, we just kind of know what we're looking at in terms of, hey, tight ends do X in year one, but then they – if they're good, and Kyle Pitts is good, they often take this type of jump in year two, this type of jump in year three. We've seen it with George Kittle. We're seeing it now with TJ Hockenson in Detroit. We've seen it with Travis Kelce before that. We've seen it over and over again with high-level tight ends of that type of jump. And I think that that's something that I'm really curious, not to look too far ahead here, where obviously this is a podcast about 2021, but in 2022, what Kyle Pitts can be, especially if he plays as well as I think he can this year.
Has, you know, you mentioned the drops. I mean, maybe it's because it's está poquito húmedo. So you never know. But, you know, it's you talk so much about his talent. Are the, you know, and what he can do with all those targets that were going to Julio Jones last year. It really does seem like the expectations are beyond crazy for him, but I mean that it really does look like, you know, just from the highlights I've seen that he could live up to at least a good portion of that, which even still would be a great rookie season.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to say, right? Like I don't expect him to be a 1,000-yard receiver as a rookie. I think that's unrealistic. You look at when TJ Hockenson was a rookie and when he was in his second year, I was covering the Lions, and I did a deep dive into the research of early career tight ends, because I've covered a few of them. Eric Ebron was another first round tight end that I covered. It's kind of a theme for me where I go. I cover stars that want to be traded between Matthew Stafford and Julio Jones, all pro receivers who want to leave early, and Calvin Johnson, who's now a Hall of Famer, and Golden Tate getting traded. And I cover teams that draft tight ends in the first round, because there's been three in the past decade, and I've covered all three of them. So, yeah, I take that for what it's worth. But I feel like I'm a little mini expert in this area in saying that, listen, these numbers, if he puts up 500-600 yards, it's a handful of touchdowns, and has 60 catches, that's a good year for a rookie tight end. Now, that might not be a great year for a number four overall pick, but that's a good year for a rookie tight end. That would put him very high up in the history of rookie tight ends. And then you build from there. Mark Andrews is another guy who had a good rookie year. And then I think he's the best tight end nobody talks about. He's on Baltimore. And I can see something like that happening, but Kyle Pitts is a special, special talent. And I think in Arthur Smith's offense, Arthur Smith is a big tight ends coach guy. I mean, that was how he came up. So he obviously has an understanding of the position as well. So I think all of these things can really help Kyle Pitts have a better rookie season than what we typically see from rookie tight ends.
I love it when you answer my questions before I even ask them. So it was perfect. This has been great. You mentioned a little bit about Russell Gage a little bit, kind of like last one on the receivers. So he's kind of clearly, projecting it out. He's probably third in the pecking order just on the receivers, if you include Kyle Pitts in that group.
Yeah, I would think so. I think there will be days and games where he is the number two option or maybe even the number one option. If, say, they're playing a team, I'm trying to think on their schedule, what team might really stand out as one that way? Tampa in week two would be one where their corners are good enough to – their top corner is good enough to be maybe a problem for Calvin Ridley. They have good safeties over the top and good linebackers in coverage that can maybe – handle or at least be problematic for Kyle Pitts. Well, if Tampa decides to take those two guys away, then Russell Gage maybe becomes your guy in single coverage, and maybe Russell Gage ends up getting 10 targets that day and becomes that type of valuable receiver. I think he has that talent in him. I don't think that is a talent that the Falcons would want to have happen on a week-to-week basis, because that means that you've got some issues with your scheme and issues with getting Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts open. But I think that Gage is good enough to be able to handle that on occasion. But I think he's a very solid number two receiver. He's a guy that last year when Julio Jones was hurt, he stepped in well, and that was on the fly. And he had I don't have it in front of me. It was, I think, somewhere between 700 and 800 yards receiving last year. And that was in kind of this hybrid role. Now he's an every down player, going to get more work, going to get more targets. So I think that he could, if they have to pass the ball as much as maybe we think they will, maybe he ends up being a low-key, sneaky 1,000-yard receiver, especially if Kyle Pitts does have some rookie struggles and they feel they need to go more to Russell Gage, or Gage has a couple blow-up games, which is possible with his speed and his skills. So I think that the opportunity is there for Russell Gage to be very, very good in this offense, and from a fantasy perspective, be somebody who you can count on, not on a week-to-week basis, but you maybe want to roster him, keep him on your bench, and then look at the matchups and say, oh, hey, this team doesn't have a really solid second cornerback. There are a few matchups I can think of off the bat that might be the case. And, hey, maybe play him this week in fantasy because that he has a chance to really be a very, very valuable piece that week to the Falcons winning or losing.
Awesome. Well, let's you touched on the running backs a little bit. You mentioned Mike Davis coming over as a free agent. I think a lot of people in the fantasy community and also the NFL were kind of surprised that the Falcons really avoided the running back position. Obviously, it's a team with a lot of needs. How do you see, you mentioned Kadri Allison, Cordarrelle Patterson, Javion Hawkins, the undrafted free agent rookie, and Dante Freeman. How do you see the running back touches kind of breaking up on this team?
Yo no sé.
Yo no sé tampoco.
By committee, realistically. I mean, even with Mike Davis, it's by committee. Mike Davis will be their running back one. He will get a lot of their carries, but then it ends up being a mix of a bunch of guys. And we'll see. And you didn't mention Caleb Huntley in there, who's a bigger back, who's run really well. And frankly, Caleb Huntley is the type of guy that if Quadri Olsen isn't careful, maybe steals a job. Deontay Foreman, who they brought in, or Deonta Foreman, rather, who they brought in. Right now, to me, until I see something more from him, he's a guy that maybe they brought in because Olsen's hurt, because they want to save Mike Davis in the preseason. He's a guy who's familiar with Arthur Smith's scheme. You can roll him out in the preseason, see what happens. And if he plays well, then maybe you put him on the roster. If he doesn't play well, okay, that's fine. To me, it feels more like an extra body situation, and we'll see what happens once Olsen gets healthier. Olsen, I wrote a large story on him actually on Saturday and what he's done to relearn how to run actually, and went into the deep dive into the mechanics of that and what they did in hopes of really jumpstarting his career, because really to this date, it has been, at least from a running perspective, not much of one. And you look at the stats and that bears that out. Last year, he couldn't get on the field in a bad situation altogether with the Falcons. So I look at it and I don't know exactly how it's going to manifest itself, because I don't think they know exactly who the running backs are going to be other than Mike Davis. And I think that that's going to come into play. And it would not shock me if it sometimes depends on the week too. You know, there could be weeks where Cordarrelle Patterson becomes your most valuable guy because you can put him a whole bunch of places. You know, if you see a matchup where, say, an opposing team's linebackers are slow, and you know that, right? Like you're looking at it, you're like, well, they don't have a guy who can cover a running back. Well, that to me might be, if Arthur Smith is as scheme smart as he seems to be, that might be a week where, hey, you're going to try and exploit that, so you get Cordarrelle Patterson on the field more because he can run wheel routes and wheel route that opposing linebacker or that opposing safety to death, and to death for that team's chance of victory. So to me, I think it's going to be very dependent on the week with some of these guys, but I think Mike Davis is going to have a role every week. I think beyond that, we don't know anything yet. And I know there were people who were excited that, oh, you know, Caleb Huntley had this run, Javian Hawkins had this run, from what they saw on the Mercedes-Benz scrimmage or some stuff during training camp, but there was no tackling. And the blocking was what it was because of the requirements or limitations from hitting. So this Friday and next week, we'll really start to give a gauge for who these other running backs on the roster might be.
And by the way, that Kadri Ellison feature, muy bueno, número uno.
Gracias.
Fantastic, fantastico. Two last football questions. The offensive line, you mentioned that it's a little bit of a work in progress. Kind of how do you forecast that group kind of coming together? It's a group that's ranked number 24 by Pro Football Focus, some youth, some veteran. How's that group shaping up?
Sure. And let's start here that you should always take the Pro Football Focus ratings with the appropriate grains of salt. Because they don't necessarily know scheme. They don't know blocking assignments. I've had linemen tell me this. This is my ninth year covering the league. I've had linemen tell me this for 9 years. Like, sure, that what they do is good and what they do is valuable and what they do is ametric, but it's not the end-all be-all. The Falcons right now have, I think, three positions pretty set. Jake Matthews is the left tackle. Matt Hennessy really seems to have won that center job outright. And then Chris Lidstrom at right guard. The other two spots are, we'll see. Josh Andrews seems to be the left guard right now. He was getting pushed by the rookie Drew Dahlman, who is also the backup center. So we'll see how that maybe shakes out in games. I don't think that competition's quite over yet, although Andrews has gotten the large bulk of the work. Then there's right tackle, which is no bueno right now. In that you have Caleb McGarry, who's coming back from PUP. So he, former first-round pick, you would think he would be the starter, but he hasn't really run with the ones yet, but they're getting him acclimated and kind of ramping him up. So he may still very well be the guy at right tackle. And if you asked me to have to, you know, say today who I think their day one right tackle will be, I think it will be Caleb McGarry. But Willie Beavers is a guy that apparently has really impressed during camp. He got moved up from kind of the depths of the roster to being the number one guy on midway through Friday's practice. And then he got all of the number one reps on Saturday, all of the number one reps on Monday, and the bulk of them on Tuesday, other than when Caleb McGarry worked in. And Caleb McGarry, by the way, on Monday worked in here or there for a snap or two, but it was largely Willie Beavers. Jalen Mayfield, to that point, had taken all of the first team reps at right tackle. He's a third round pick out of Michigan. Then all of a sudden on Friday, he mysteriously gets sent to the second field. And we're like, all right, maybe they're just trying something. Maybe he's just having a bad practice. He has not taken a first team snap since. And that was very interesting to me. When I asked Arthur Smith about it, he said that, you know, he's trying to create competition. But to me, competition, and I've said this too, competition is when you're seeing guys really compete. There's, like, it's been Willie Beavers. practice after practice. Now, watch. I say this on Tuesday, and now on Wednesday, it'll be Jalen Mayfield and Caleb McGarry, and there'll be no sign of Willie Beavers. That's just how this goes in training camp. But that right tackle spot's a big concern, I think, for what this line's going to be, because you know what you're getting out of Jake Matthews. You know what you're getting out of Chris Lindstrom. We'll see what happens with Matt Hennessy. This is his first year really being a starter because he was playing behind Alex Mack before. And then left guard still remains to be a question. I think that those left guard, right tackle are going to be the positions to watch in the preseason games and in those joint practices against Miami. And you kind of figure out what that's going to look like from there. But to me, I've always been a believer and taking this from talking to linemen that you have to have continuity there and you have to get as many snaps as possible. So I would think that they need to work this out as soon as they possibly can to make sure that these five guys are all understanding what it's like to play together and get some reps like that before they're playing the Eagles in week one on September 11th, 12th, whatever day that is.
I got to tell you, much as I love talking about offense and fantasy players, I always love a good O-line breakdown because I really think they're just kind of there's no fantasy success without those guys doing their jobs. So
no, there's no football without the offensive line. It'd be 7-0, it'd be flag football, which frankly, Jorge, you and I could probably have a better shot at. Well, maybe you, I can't. than anything else. Like the line is what makes the difference, I think. And they often go overlooked because there's not any sort of stats or any sort of anything really that makes them, but there are, I mean, from an interview perspective, I also really enjoy talking with offensive linemen when I can talk to them one-on-one because they're also often some of the smartest players on the team and the most insightful into what's really going on both within the team and within a certain play because they have to understand all of it.
Incredible. Well, last football question, and you already touched on the defense a little bit. This team was really, they were bad against the pass last year. So decent toward the end of the season against the run. Where do you see kind of the strengths, weaknesses this year on the defense?
Todos los partidos. In that they have, they have good top end talent. Grady Jarrett's one of the better interior defensive linemen in the league. Deion Jones and Foye Olukun are, and I think I just butchered his name, still working on it, again, new on the beat, are high-level linebackers. And Deion Jones is a great coverage linebacker. Foye can kind of do a little bit of everything. At corner, A.J. Terrell was a rookie last year. He has been, to me, the star of training camp. He has been dominant. He makes plays every single day in camp. And if he is 95% of what I've seen in camp, he has the potential to be maybe a top 10 corner this year. That's how good he's looked. And their other secondary pieces have been okay. I mean, you have two solid veterans back there at safety and Eric Harris and Daron Harmon. And you have Fabian Moreau at the other corner. Well, that's not an exciting name. He's perfectly fine number two cornerback. Especially when you're bringing in a veteran guy. They drafted a couple corners, but they were day three picks. I don't expect either one of them to start or really even play all that much. Avery Williams might end up winning the punt return job, but I think that's the only way he gets on the field, barring injuries, as a rookie. So their top-end talent is good. Their depth is where there's some major, major questions. And all that really starts with the pass rush, too, because that's, I think, the biggest question mark on the team. They didn't really do anything to address pass rush. They brought back Steven Means, but Steven Means is a rotational guy. They brought in Brandon Copeland, but Copeland's more of a, you can kind of plug him in anywhere, and he's a really good special teams guy type player. He's not going to get you double-digit sacks. Dante Fowler, they're obviously hoping will rebound from a poor 2020, but that's a lot to put on Dante Fowler's shoulders. And you look at everything else, and it's rookies, it's unproven guys, and I just don't know where that pass rush is going to be coming from. And it may come from the interior with Grady Jarrett, but if that's the case, you need to have guys who can really seal and clean that up, because as quarterbacks escape the pocket, you need a defensive end or a linebacker there to clean that up. Otherwise, you're sunk. And I just don't know if the Falcons have that. And that's, to me, one of the biggest questions that won't get answered until, that week three, week four that I was talking about of the regular season, because I just don't think you're going to get that answer in preseason when it comes to the defense. So that's a major hole to me. I think their secondary has the potential to be a strength, and their top end linebackers have potential to be strengths as well. But both of those spots are very thin, where one injury, especially at corner or at linebacker, and that can get really, really trying really, really quick from a football perspective.
All right. Well, one last one, it's always the fun question I love to close with. What are your favorite types of tacos?
Ooh, so, okay. I mean, I can give, we've been going about a half hour. I could give a half hour's worth of taco and arepa and, enchilada and fajita type conversation. I love food. I'm a big foodie. I actually can't eat certain foods. So usually I stick with corn because I can't eat flour. So usually corn tortillas, corn tacos. I don't eat red meat anymore, so that eliminates some things. But get me a good fish taco, and I'm a happy person. Get me like a chicken tinga taco, or trying to think. This, they put me on the spot here. I forget where I was, but I had these great tacos with duck, and those were fantastic. But yeah, just give me so I live across the street from a Bar Taco, and Bar Taco is obviously a chain, but their tacos are pretty good. Nothing to me though is as good as kind of the hole in the wall, you've never heard of it spot, and going there for any type of food, period. That's what I prefer. I haven't found those places in Atlanta yet for Mexican food, for tacos, but I'm on the lookout for them. If any of your listeners can send me some suggestions, I would be greatly appreciative. So that's their homework for this. But I'm also a big arepas fan, and I actually found this place in Vegas in June that it's actually technically on Las Vegas Boulevard, but it's kind of in the middle between the strip and downtown. So like there's no reason for you to really be there, but this place is awesome. Like it's some of the best arepas I've had. I found another place in Philly I was the only person in there, but it was fantastic. Sorry to go off. I know I'm avoiding the taco question, but tacos, I'm all about it. And I like my tacos with some pico, with some cheese, with some guac if I can have it. And like I said, generally a corn shell, whether it's a soft corn shell or a hard corn shell, get some maybe fajita vegetables in there as well, if it's maybe a higher end taco place. And then more than likely chicken or shrimp or fish for me in that. But sometimes places are really creative, and the more creative they are with what they put in their tacos, the more excited I get.
Oh, well, it's lunchtime out here in LA, so you got me fired up. You got me hungry, man.
I will admit, this is terrible because I've been trying to make sure I've been good in training, but I created my own ice cream sandwich. That was lunch today because that's how hot it's been here. So that is what I'm eating these days, is I'm just gorging on sugar and pastry product, gluten-free pastry products to kind of make sure I can survive.
Oh, well, that's why the corn tortillas are the best. So they're able to get you through that, anything gluten-free. And hey,
yeah, try absolutely.
Cold tacos aren't like cold pizza, but they still can make this.
So I used to live in Michigan, right? And there was this place in Ann Arbor I loved it. It's called Isolita. If any of your listeners ever go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, go to Isolita. Their fajitas are fantastic, but they do a really good job with tacos. They have like 6-7 different types of tacos that they mess around with. Big, big fan of that place. There's also a place called Chela's, which is more of that hole-in-the-wall variety that I was talking about. Isolita is decidedly not a hole-in-the-wall. But those are my two really go-to places when I lived in Ann Arbor. And like I said, I don't have any in Atlanta yet, but on the lookout. So hopefully someone can come through and find me a good taco place here in Atlanta. I'd be greatly appreciative.
Or you know what? Someone's got to find you some ceviche. You can have that cold, and that's...
Oh, yeah. Bring it on. Bring all of that food on, Jorge. When I come out to L.A., you got to send me to the best taco place in L.A. I'm holding you to that.
Okay, guisados. So we're gonna guisados, and we'll meet up. Oh, you, it's oh, I got. There's multiple locations. It's the best place. It's fantastic.
So. I'm sold now. See, now I'm just gonna get on a plane to LA. Forget the preseason. Forget training camp. I'll see you tonight.
And truth be told, any taco truck is gonna be just a nine. you know, compared to pretty much anywhere. So, hey, I know you were short on time. So, Michael, I so appreciate this. I laughed more than I have in most of these, and all of these have been incredibly entertaining, and I so appreciate the Spanish. Otra vez, can you share where people can find your great work?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, at Mike Rothstein. You can follow me on Facebook at Michael Rothstein Journalist. All of my stuff's at ESPN.com. I'm usually pretty interactive with people. Occasionally, I will try and answer in Spanish if I can. If you ask me a question in Spanish, there's also the beautiful thing called Google Translate if I can't. So I'm going to at least make an effort. More than happy to. And thank you again for having me on. And let's do this again another time soon.
Love it. Love it. Familia, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and for YouTube for putting our faces out there. Please make sure to subscribe on the audio side, Apple, Google, Spotify. Find original content at familiaffb.com. You can find me at JorgeMartin17 on Twitter, and you can find go to at familiaffb on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us there too. Otra vez, Michael, thank you so much. Muchas gracias for doing this. And everybody, todos somos familia. Salud.